29th, 2004. We're studying in the 14th chapter of Isaiah tonight. Arthur Eggers, the teacher. This chapter continues from 13, where we read of Babylon's destruction. Babylon, as a people, represent the Gentile world kingdoms in the last days, especially in the last days. Four Gentile world empires were chosen of God to rule over Israel until God's time. When God's time to set up a kingdom, then he'll take the rulership away from the Gentiles. And then he'll set up a descendant of David to take this place. And the descendant of David that's going to have this place is Jesus Christ. And so we know that he's going to reign until all enemies put under his feet. The last enemy, will be death. In verse 1, for the Lord will have mercy upon Jacob and will choose Israel and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. There's four words here, adjectives, that describe God's work for his people. And the first one is mercy. When I read this, I thought of 2 Samuel 7:15. It reads, but my mercy shall not depart away from him as I took it as with David. God gave David a promise, a covenant, an everlasting covenant. And God's going to keep that. And Christ will be the end of this covenant. It'll be the fulfillment, I should say, of this covenant. God made in First Chronicles, let's turn over and read that, I think. 1 Chronicles 17, verse 11. I'll read on down through 14, I guess. And it shall come to pass, when the days shall be expired, that thou must go to be with thy fathers, and I will raise up thy seed after thee, which shall be thy sons, and I will establish his kingdom. And he shall build me a house, and I will establish his throne forever. And I will be his father, and he shall be my son. And I will not take my mercy away from him, as I took it from him that was before thee. But I will settle him in mine house and in my kingdom forever. And his throne shall be established forevermore. Well, we know by history that Solomon's line was cut off, wasn't it? But God was so wonderful to bring in Jesus from another lineage altogether, another son of David, to fulfill his promise to him. In Psalms chapter 9, we have another thought along this line. In verse 13, Psalm of David, he said, have mercy upon me, O Lord, consider my trouble which I suffer of them that hate me. Thou that liftest me up from the gates of death, that I may show forth all thy praise in the gates of the daughters of Zion, and I will rejoice in thy salvation. The heathen are sunk down in the pits that made them. In the net which they hid is their own foot taking. The Lord is known by the judgment which he executeth. The wicked is snared in the work of his own hands. Selah. This mercy that we see was taken on Christ on the cross. And as a seed of David, God lifted him up. He considered his troubles as a man, and he lifted him up out of the gates of death and set him before the gates of the daughters of Zion. Now, this is future yet, verse 14 is, but it's going to be. But the thought I have is all because of the mercies of God, that all of these things exist. Let's look at one more along the same line in the 18th Psalm, and verse, find it here, 47. It is God that advantaged me and subdueth the people under me. He delivereth me from mine enemies, yea, thou liftest me above those that arise up against me. Thou hast delivered me from the violent man. Therefore will I give thanks unto thee, O Lord, among the heathen, and sing praises unto thy name. Great deliverance given unto given he to his king. He showeth mercy to his anointed, to David and to the seed forever. So again, we're talking about Jesus that God will raise up in the last days. But again, I say, it's the mercies of God. The most rebellious of these tribes will confess his mercy in the last days when Jesus comes. In Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 18 through 20, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tent, and have mercy upon his dwelling place, and the city shall be built upon her own heap, and the palace shall remain after the manner thereof, and out of them shall proceed thanksgiving, and the voice of them that make merry, and I will multiply them, and they shall not be few. I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small. Their children also shall be as aforetime, and their congregation shall be established before me, and I will punish all that oppose them or oppress them. And so God is for them, and he's going to show his mercy upon them as a people. Then the second word that we have in our lesson is yet choose, and will yet choose Israel. God hasn't changed his mind. He made a choice of Israel in Abraham, and he carried it on through Isaac and Jacob, and he's hasn't changed on his choice, has he? He's still going to use them. There's a verse in Zechariah chapter 1, verse 17, along the thought of this choice, and we read there, cry out, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, my cities, through prosperity, shall yet be spread abroad, and the Lord shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. Yet choose them. He's going to comfort them because of his choice many years ago in Abraham. The third word is set them, never to be removed again. The word is connected with bringing down here. And the thought here is to deposit or cast down. And God will be in full control of everything he does. He's going to set them just exactly where he wants them, no other place, in their own land. And the strangers shall be joined together. Now, this is the fourth one of these adjectives. The strangers joined with them. Now, we know from many other scriptures that the Gentiles will see what Israel's God has done for them. And through their testimony, the Gentiles will worship the same God as Israel worships. Now, you say, don't they do that now? No. Many have many other gods, Gentiles. A Gentile is anyone that's not of Israel. So all the other nations will come in through Jerusalem, and Jerusalem will be the center. Jerusalem will be the worship center, I should say, of the whole world at that time. In verse 2, and the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for service and handmaidens, and they shall take them captive, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. The oppressing Gentiles, when they had Israel under such terrible control, especially during Antiochus' reign and many others. Oh, the oppression was so terrible. Well, they didn't show any mercy on Israel. But when God brings them under Israel's domain, God's going to show mercy on these Gentiles and show love to them, the same love that he showed to them at the cross. But they're going to be taken captive. And we read here that they're going to be made servants to Israel. Now they have oppressed Israel all these years, and now they have become captives to Israel. And this is still future, by the way. It hasn't been brought to pass. Then in verse 3, and I'm going to read down through several verses here through 8. It shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from thy hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve. Thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased. The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, and he that ruleth the nations in anger is persecuted, and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir tree rejoiceth at thee, and the cedar of Lebanon sing. Since thou hast laid it down, no feller has come upon us. There's several things here that need to be mentioned, but first I want us to realize that there's going to be a rest to Israel. Now, in the last part of the third and the early part of the fourth chapter of Hebrews, tells us that they came up to Kadesh Barnea and they couldn't enter into God's rest because of unbelief. Unbelief and rebellion has kept them out of God's rest all these years ever since. They never really fully came into his rest. Oh yes, they went across Jordan. They came in and conquered the land. But the sad one of the sad stories that we have in Joshua is they dwelled with the Canaanites. They dwelled among them. And they've never come into the fullness of God's rest. Well, they will. This offer is still good. This offer has been made many times. But because of unbelief, Israel has missed their rest. But now in Christ, they're going to have their rest. Rest from sorrow, rest from burdens, rest from fear, and hard bondages has come upon them all these years. They're going to all be taken away, and they're going to rest. In verse 4, we read of how this is going to happen. And it's kind of a pun here against the nation. And what he's saying in verse 4, you were so great and oppressed us. Now we oppress you. You are the golden city, they said. That's what they call themselves, the golden city. But now you are a destroyed city. Now this, as I said before, Babylon is a type of all the world powers up to the very end. They're a picture of them. And so as God brought the Medes and the Persians down against Babylon, he also is going to bring their own enemies against them to destroy them in the last days. In verse 5 now tells us how it was done. It was the Lord that did it. The Lord hath broken the staff. The Lord broke Babylon. He broke the Medes and the Persians, and he broke the Romans. But there's going to be a revival of the Roman Empire one of these days, and the Lord will break out in the last days. He raises up nations, and he brings nations down. So we read here that the Lord broke you, and he removed your power. And in verse 6, we read that there's a continual stroke. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke. Through all the Gentile powers, one at a time, there's four of them, God used the same stroke to bring them down. The one who rules the nations in anger at this time that we're reading here will be the Antichrist that will be conquered. The only one that will be able to conquer him is Christ himself. And then in verse 7, the whole earth is at rest. And so you see, after the Antichrist is conquered, all these Gentile nations will be put under, then the kingdom joys will enter in verse 7 and 8. And oh, what a joy this will be. How they will sing, as Moses and his followers sang in Exodus 15, and they lifted up their voice, sang the horse and the rider as he's thrown into the sea. And then also the song of Deborah in Judges 5. Is a song of victory. I think there might be another one that they'll be singing in this last days. And Deborah said, "Oh, praise ye the Lord for the avenging of Israel when the people willingly offered themselves." And that's just exactly what's going to happen at that time, the people that will offer themselves. There'll be a great rest. We read, the whole earth, verse 7, will be at rest. So a great rest and quiet. Now this means simply that there'll be no more wars. And Isaiah tells us in, well, chapter 2 we had at one place, he said that he would judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. That'd be a wonderful time. No more war. No more fear. The earth will be quiet. The earth will be at rest. The earth will bring forth in singing. It'll be a glorious time. Yeah, according, we have the same thought in Micah 4, verse 3, where we read that the singing will be heard everywhere. Everywhere. And then in verse 8, that the fir tree, these trees here are symbolic of the beauty of God's natural things on earth. All of God's nature will rejoice at this time. We read in the 8th chapter of Romans that they're all groaning today. All creation groaneth in pain, waiting for the deliverance of the people of God. But at this time, all creation will be excited, I should say, I guess, about this. In Psalms 104, verses 16, 17, and 18, and most of us have read this many times, the trees of the Lord are full of sap. The cedar are living substance, full of sap. The cedars of Lebanon, which he hath planted, where the birds make their nest. As for the stork, the fir trees are her nest. High hills are the refuge for the wild goat, and the rocks for the conies. See, these things will increase because war destroys God's beauty. But there wouldn't be any war if there wasn't any sin. So actually we can say sin destroys the beauty of God. Verses 9 on down to 17. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirs up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their throne all the kings of the nation. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worms, is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be as brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee, and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, did shake kingdom? Thou made the world as a wilderness, and destroyed the cities thereof, that have opened not the house of the prisoners. These verses are directly to Satan himself. In Isaiah's vision, God takes him into the lower Sheol, translated hell. Now last night we talked about in the book of Ephesians, we talked about how Jesus went down into the upper Sheol and led captivity captive in Ephesians 4. Now we read of the lower Sheol, or the unredeemed, the unsaved people had gone. In Isaiah's time, there were two areas in the heart of the earth, the upper and the lower, Sheol. Psalms 86:13 tells us that there is a lowest Sheol. It says, "For great is thy mercy toward me, and thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest Sheol." And we also read, and I'm going over what we had last night a little bit here, but in Luke 16:19-31, we read of the story that of Lazarus and the rich man and Lazarus, and Lazarus died, and he went into Abraham's bosom. So there, it's called Abraham's bosom. And the rich man died and went to hell, and there was a great gulf fixed between these two. And the rich man wanted Abraham to let Lazarus dip his finger in the water and cool his tongue. And he said, "No, it can't be done." He said, "Well, send somebody to my brothers and tell them." He said, "No, if they wouldn't believe before, they won't believe you. Even if you raised from the dead, they wouldn't believe you." But he went into the lowest. The rich man went into the lowest hell, and Lazarus went into the upper hell, or grave. Let's put it that way. Then in Luke 23, verses 42 and 43, the thief that was crucified with Jesus said to Jesus, "Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom." And Jesus said unto him, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise." Not tomorrow, but the very day he died, he would be with me in paradise. So that put paradise in the heart of the earth, along with the lowest Sheol. But when Jesus went down, he led captivity captive, he brought them out. And after Jesus' resurrection, he took paradise into the third heavens. Now read this in 2 Corinthians 12, the first four verses. And Paul mentioned there, he said, "I knew a man, Christ, about 14 years ago, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth. Such a one was caught up into the third heaven." So we're talking about the third heaven here. And he said, "I knew such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth, how that he was caught up into paradise." So he told the thief on the cross, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." He said, "As Jonah was in the belly of the whale 3 days and three nights, so shall the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth." So now we read that paradise is in the third heaven. So now when we die, why, we'll go into the third heavens to be with the Lord in paradise. I had another thought there a minute there, let's see. But this view of prophecy shows that souls of the world leader, world rulers, I should say, that was led by Satan in a place of the dead. Now, Satan will be cast there after the tribulation is over. In Revelation 20, the first three verses of Revelation 20, is not the same as in Revelation 9. This is two different places, and I don't want to spend a lot of time in there. But the one in verse chapter 20 is 42 months earlier than that in chapter 9. So you can look that up for yourself. But Satan is always stirring up trouble. This may cause us to believe that those in hell are still conscious, because even in this vision, we see them talking. Now, we know we don't base doctrine on parables and visions and things. God interprets them for us. But nevertheless, these were conscious and were able to talk. They could speak, knowing things. But I think the best one is in Luke 16, because that is not a parable. And the rich man was conscious and knew what he was saying. And Lazarus knew what he was saying, and Abraham knew what he was saying. So, and this was before Abraham was raised at the same time as Jesus was. Anyway, they all spoke directly to Satan here in our lesson. And notice the weakness. Even though he seemed to be so strong, he was weak. In verse 11, we read the word pomp, and it means an uproar or a noise, a big blow. Well, let's call him that, a big blowhard. That's what we're saying here. I will ascend above, well, let's see, we'll go up a little. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? Now, his pomp is what brought him to the grave. His pride brought him down to the grave. And the noise of his vials. I think the word vial is a musical instrument. The first mention of musical instruments was from the line of Cain. I can't remember his name now right off the top of my head, but he was the first one to have an organ. But Tubal, yeah, that's right. And then we read in Ezekiel that Satan, Lucifer, was full of pipes within and without. And so we see a very musical instrument in him. Ezekiel 28:13 is what I had in mind. It says that he's talking about the king of Tyrus, but this could not be the king of Tyrus because the king of Tyrus was never in Eden, the Garden of Eden. But we read in 28:13 that thou hast been in a garden, in Eden, in the garden of God. So it couldn't have been the prince of Tyrus they're talking about. And when it gives a description of Lucifer here in Ezekiel 28, he says, ever precious stone was thy covering, thy sardis and the topaz and so forth. And all these precious stones was the workmanship of thy timbrels, pipes, and of thy pipes. Now this has the thought of pipe organs, musical pipes. It could be pipe of horns piping down. They prepared thee in the day that thou was created. So God made him a very musical person. And this could not be the king of Tyrus, you see. All his best, all his beauty, all he had didn't help him in the end. And like all of them that followed him, his covering and pillow instead of silk, it was worms. He at one time, he had the best. Now he has the worst. In verse 12 through 17 of this, shows Lucifer's fall. His condition, of his fallen condition. It's Satan. Lucifer itself means son of the morning, son of light, a light bearer. There's several thoughts within that. And he's changed now from light bearer, son of the morning, to an adversary. At one time, Lucifer was an archangel. Now he's the accuser of the brethren. So there were at one time, there was three archangels. Now, this is all the Bible mentions. And I know some people say that there's seven of them and so forth, but Bible only mentions three, Gabriel. And Gabriel seemed to be the speaker of God, a mouthpiece for God in many places. Then Lucifer worked with God's planning. Kind of God's planner helping there. And Michael was a warrior. He was an overseer and a protector. So they all had a job to do, but it was Lucifer that fell. This is not a question here in verse 12, it's an exclamation. In Luke 10:18, Jesus said, I beheld Satan, notice it's not Satan, not Lucifer. I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Christ was there when he fell, and his name was changed at that time, at his fall, from Lucifer, from a son of the morning, or the son of light, to an accuser of the brethren, and he began to act like Satan at that time. In Luke 11:18, Jesus said, if Satan also be divided against himself, how shall his kingdom stand? And this tells us that he has a kingdom. God has still let him have a kingdom. And we might ask why. Well, because he's got a purpose in it, in bringing his will to pass. Now, if he was God's planner before his fall, he's still working as a planner in God's purpose even today, after his fall, and all this. And then he goes on to say, because you say that I cast out demons through Beelzebub. And so Satan has a kingdom. And then in John 12:31, Jesus says, now is the judgment of this world. Now is the prince of this world be cast down. And then in 14:30, John 14:30. He said, "Hereafter I will not talk much with you, for the prince of the world cometh and hath nothing in me." Now, God is using him as a prince of this world to form a bride for his son. So don't get discouraged or downhearted when he attacks us, because this is all in God's purpose and in God's planning. Just remember that greater is he that's in you than he that's in the world. And we're more than conquerors through him that loved us. But don't get discouraged if Satan attacks us. In 2 Corinthians 11, we have a mention of him in verse 14. And Paul makes this statement concerning Satan. He says that no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Well, that's where he was to begin with as Lucifer. But he's not that anymore, so he acts like that. He transforms himself into an angel of light. He's cut down to the ground, so all of his kingdom is ground, our earth kingdom. Put it that way. In Genesis 3, we see him on the ground, but now he's called the prince and the power of the air. Ephesians 2:2, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. So he has a lot of children. They're all disobedient, and their disobedience is the fact that they rejected Christ. Israel is a disobedient nation, and so he has a lot of children of disobedience. All right, verse 13, the reason for his fall. Thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend unto heaven and will exalt thy name. You see, this is a reason. He had an attitude problem, and there are five I wills in verse 13 and 14. I will ascend to heaven. I will exalt my throne above God's. I will sit, and I take this to mean the high places as the sons of God. I will sit. We see that in Job 1, 6, where the sons of God joined in with God, and Satan kind of went in there with them. And then another one is in Job 26, 7, where we read that God stretched out the north, out of the north, over empty spaces and hang the earth on nothing. When we think of the power of God and the stars and the solar systems and all these things, and no wonder Lucifer coveted them. And I guess he thought that he was just big enough to overthrow God. And astronomers tell us that they say that there's something that the solar systems rotate around, but they can't find it in the sides of the north. Is there something there, that solar systems on top of solar systems, that the most powerful telescope can't reach? All creation is circling around it. In verse 14, you see Lucifer's desire to take God's place, and he will do this for a short time. Actually, for 42 months, he will take the place of God in the personage of the Antichrist. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4, now here's a description of the Antichrist, but this is really a fulfilling the desires of Satan, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped. So he, as God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So for 42 months, he will do that. He'll show himself to be a great God. Then verse 15, this yet thou shalt be brought down to hell to the sides of the north. Now this hasn't been fulfilled yet. This is not God's purpose. God has Calvary in mind to bring him down. Jesus bruised the serpent's head on the cross. That's the first prophecy we have in the Bible, Genesis 3:15, that the seed of the woman shall bruise the serpent's head and it shall bruise his heel. The second casting down is provisional. Now we find this in Hebrews 2, verse 14, of the second casting down. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, He also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil. Then the last time he'll be cast down will be literally in the 20th chapter of Revelation, and he'll go down into the pit of the abyss. So there's actually three distinct different times of his casting down. In verse 16 and 17, we see that the one that exalted himself is now being mocked. Such greatness has been brought down to the depths of nothingness. In Ezekiel 31, and I'm not going to read all this, I'm not going to take the time, but you read it. Verses 16 through 18 tells us of how this is going to take place. But we know that Lucifer had some followers, and he does today. But his first followers was angelic beings. Now, we read in Peter that some of them were bound with chains in the pit of abyss. And I was trying to think where that is in Peter, but you'll have to look it up, because it's 2 Peter 2:4. God spared not the angels of sin that cast them down into hell or a pit of the abyss, and delivered them into chains to be reserved unto judgment. Not the angel's judgment, but the earth's judgment we're talking about there. And so, but I don't know the difference between demons that are free and the fallen angels and those that are in the pit. It seemed like that these are one and the same to me. The ones that he's put in the pit were probably the most demeanest and most disobedient of all the rest of the fallen angels. But you can study that out for yourself. Say another thought in there. Not all the fallen angels were cast into this pit, though. That's a point I want to make. Because there's some that we wrestle with today. Ephesians 6:12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against wicked spirits in high places. So there's some wicked spirits in the upper places. That doesn't mean in the throne of God or even in the solar system, but in the atmospheric high places. And so we have this battle against these principalities and powers that are in high places. But they're going to be cast out of heaven one of these days too. Because in Revelation 12, we read of a war in heaven. And Michael and his angels will fight against Satan and his angels, and they'll be cast down to the earth at that time too. No more will they be in high places. But at the end of the, this will take place 250 days before the middle of the tribulation, 42 months before the end of the tribulation. But Jesus tells us of their final abode in Matthew 25. We might ought to read that. Verse 41 of Matthew 25. It says, then shall he say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, unto everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. They have a prepared place. The nations that identify themselves with the devil and his angels will be in that same place. It isn't prepared for the nations. It's prepared for the devil and his angels. So this is already prepared, and God already knows this is not Sheol, but an everlasting fire. In Revelation 20, verse 14, we read that death and hell will be cast into a lake of fire. This is the second death. So this is a much deeper place than lower hell is. Then verse 18, well, let's take a break here, I think, and start with verse 18. Verse 18 through 27, now this section is time following the tribulation. God will bless the nations of the earth, and these are sheep nations of Matthew 25, and we'll read that in a few minutes. All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, every one in his own house, but thou art cast down, but thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch. And as the remnant of those that are slain. Thus, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass of trodden under feet. And thou shalt not join them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land, and slain thy people. The seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with circuit. For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name, and the remnant, and the sons, and the nephews, saith the Lord. And I will also make a possession for the bedrin, and the pool of water, and I will sweep it with the besom of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts. And the Lord of hosts hath sworn, saying, surely I have thought, so shall it come to pass. And as I have purposed, so shall it stand. That I will break the Assyrian in my land, and upon my mountain tread him under foot, and shall his yoke be departed from off them, and his burden depart from off their shoulders. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. For the Lord of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? And we say, no one. You know, we're talking about the nations of the earth. And in Matthew 25, and I'm not going to turn to that. Well, maybe I should. Maybe we should. Matthew 25, we have the end time, the very last, after the tribulation is all over. There's going, and Jesus sits down on his throne in glory. And in verse 31, and the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him. Then shall he sit on the throne of his glory. So this takes place after the tribulation is all over, Satan has been judged and cast into the pit. And then we read of two groups of nations. One, the first is called sheep, it'll be on his right hand, and the other is called goats, it'll be on his left hand. Now these are not individuals, but these are nations. And the ones on the right hand, and I'm not going to read all that, are the ones that do Israel good. He goes through all these things and they said, when have we done this? When you did this to the least of thee, my people. That's when you did it. So the nation that blessed Israel will be sheep nations, and the nations that curse Israel and go against Israel will be goat nations. And we know that the goat nations then, on over toward the verse 41, he shall say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. So these will be a separation of nations on the earth. But this isn't Lucifer. He'll be already there. He's called in verse 19 of our lesson, he's called an abominable branch. Well, Jesus is called a branch in Isaiah 11:1, but he's the good branch. As Lucifer had going to take that place, he became an abominable branch. In Jeremiah 23:5, we read there, that behold, the day comes, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch. This is the Lord Jesus Christ. And he'll be a king. He'll reign and prosper. And then in the 33rd chapter of Jeremiah, verse 15, we read, in those days and at that time, I will cause the branch of righteousness to grow up unto David, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. So he's also seen as Lucifer here is seen, Jesus is seen as the righteous judge that will execute righteousness, And Lucifer here is seen as a false covering that others will depend upon in verse 19. And then in verse 20, thou shalt not be joined with them in burial. Satan will have no burial funeral. No tears will be shed for him. Nobody will be there to watch him buried. And note here in verse 20, it says, because thou hast destroyed thy land and slain thy people, the seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. He'll have many followers, and because of him they will all be destroyed, and his children are the children of disobedience, as I mentioned it before in Ephesians 2:2. Then he's called here the seed of evildoers. Renown. The word renown here means to approach someone, to greet. There will not be any fellowship there whatsoever. In verse 21 and 22, there's no future hope for these people's posterity. In verse 23, we read that the whole system of Gentile powers that in which Babylon represents will never be again. Only for the birds. Besom is a broom to rid of the dirt, to sweep the dirt out. Verse 24, I guess I want. And the Lord of hosts hath sworn, saying, surely I have thought, and so it shall come to pass. Just as sure as I thought, it's going to come to pass. So God's word, God's thoughts, I should say, is as good as his word, isn't it? It's going to happen. It's as good as done. When he just has a thought, it's just as well as it's done. God's purpose is the same as when it's finished right now. In verse 25 through 27, the thought here is all the Gentile powers that have oppressed Israel so many years will be broken forever. They have fulfilled God's purpose. And note there God's land in verse 20. Let me find it here. 25. Yeah, right here. I missed it. That I will break Assyrian in my land. And then he talks about my mountain that tread him under. Well, these are God's people that's going to do this. All Israel, especially in Mount Zion. The whole earth and all the nations will feel his hand, and no one will be able to change this fact. No one will be able to help him. And we know what the end is going to be. We read the last chapter of the book. Jesus will win the battle. In verse 26, we know the purpose of God's plan, that is. It is that God will have a earthly people through the fellowship, faithful and obedient people, like Abraham. He needs only to raise his hand and the nations will be broken and their yoke and burden will depart. Verse 28 through 32 to the end of the chapter. In the year that King Ahaz died was this burden. Rejoice not, thou whole Palestinia, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken, for out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a fiery flying serpent. And the firstborn of the poor shall feed, and the needy shall lie down in safety, and I will kill thy root with famine, and he shall slay thy remnant. Howl, O gates, cry, O city, thou whole Palestinia art dissolved, for there shall come from the north a smoke, and none shall be alone in his appointed time. What shall one then answer, and the messenger of the nation? And the Lord hath founded Zion, the poor of his people shall trust in it. Ahaz was a bad king. He led Judah into idolatry. Hezekiah believed God then, but he was too late. The Philistines was not to rejoice because more sorrow was to come A salamander came first as Assyrians, and then Nebuchadnezzar came after that. Then came Darius and Cyrus and Alexander the Great and the Romans, and one is broken, and the next comes up is a worse king than the one that was broke. Babylon, we read here, is the root. The Medes are the cockatrice. The crawling, flying serpent is even more evil and deadly than the root. Now, all of this will be broken, and the kingdoms will come. Christ will feed the poor and the needy in safety. The root of sin was from Adam, but God's going to take care of that Adamic sin. In fact, Christ took care of it at the cross to start with. And then verse 31, this is a promise that God made to Abraham because he spared not Isaac. We all know the story of Genesis 22, and he took Isaac upon the mount to slay him, and God knew that he wouldn't let down on his promise. He believed God. And in verse 17, he said that in blessing, he said, "Will I bless thee, and in multiplying will I multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sands of the sea which upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemy." Now, this hasn't come to pass yet in its fullness. Oh, they had a good kingdom while David was alive, but after David, it began to deteriorate. You say, "I thought Solomon was the wisest king." Yes, but he didn't use his wisdom, and it deteriorated. His son had less wisdom. Rehoboam had less wisdom than Solomon used, and it just went downhill from that. But the blessings that we read there is in Christ Jesus and him alone. In Genesis 24, verse 60, we have a blessing too that was given to Rebekah. And they said to Rebekah when she departed, "Be thou the mother of thousands of millions, and let thy seed possess the gate of those which hate them." And she will be in time, the mother of thousands of millions. And she will possess this gate, as we read here. Smoke here has a thought of the presence of the Lord, as we had in chapter 4, verse 5. Verse 32 of our lesson. Let's see. What shall one then answer the messenger of the nation? So the nations are going to ask a question. And what one then answers the messenger of the nation? And what's the question? That the Lord hath founded Zion. That's going to be the answer. The question would be concerning the condition there, but the answer is the Lord hath founded Zion. The poor of his people shall trust in it. And oh, I say you, what a miracle this will be when the Lord establishes Zion. They will sit down together. He will take counsel with them, and the nations will see what God has done with them. Let's look at Psalms 102 in along this line, verse 19. Now, let's 16. When the Lord shall build up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. He will regard the prayers of the destitute and not despise their prayer. This shall be written for generation to come, and the people which shall be created will praise the Lord, for he hath looked down from the height of his sanctuary from heaven and did the Lord upon the earth. To hear the groanings of the prisoners and loose those that are appointed to death. And I wonder if it'll be when God takes care of these. He shall. And in verse 18, notice that. This shall be written for the generation to come. And I think one of these days Israel will see this and read it and rejoice in it. We read here of the messengers of the nation. When messengers come from the nations to inquire as the state of Judah, the only reply they'll have is, "The Lord has established this. The Lord has done it." There'll be no boasting there. It's all the mercies and the grace of an almighty God that has done this. There will be no works of man's involved here to boast in whatsoever. There's a verse in Zephaniah 3:11 that's fitting along this same thought. In the day shall thou not be ashamed of all thy doings, wherein thou hast transgressed against me. For then, I'm going to underline that word then, for then I will take away out of the midst of thee them that rejoice in thy pride. So God isn't going to have any rejoicing in pride. He's going to take all this out of the midst of them. And thou shalt no more be haughty because of thy holy mountain. So all their sins will be blotted out. They'll have nothing to boast in because Christ will be in the midst of them. And he'll give them a new heart. Now, with a new heart, that they're going to be able to dwell in God's holy mountain, Zion. Without that, they can't. Psalms 87, first three verses of this. Reading that his mountain is the holy mount. And we read there that the Lord loveth the gates of Zion more than all the dwellings of Jacob. Glorious things are spoken of thee, O city of God, Selah. And how great this will be when that's his place and he'll take his place in his choice city. 2 Samuel 5:7, when talking about this city that Zion, the gates of Zion, is not in Independence, Missouri, and we can prove that by 2 Samuel 5:7. It says, nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same is the city of David. The stronghold of Zion is the city of David. Now, Jesus, being a descendant of David, will reign in Jerusalem, in a section of Jerusalem called Zion. In Acts 13:22, Paul states concerning David, and when they removed him, he raised up unto them David to be their king, to whom also he gave testimony, and that's what I want, and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after mine own heart, which shall fulfill all my will. Well, was this the Jesse back there? Or is it the Jesus that's the seed of David? You see, it's Jesus that will fulfill the covenant of David and bless the city that's called by his name. And it's going to be a glorious blessing. Of course, we're going to be gone ahead of this quite a bit. Let's look into the next chapter. It's kind of short. Only 9 verses in the next chapter. We'll look at chapter 15. And it's concerning Moab and the burden of Moab. Because of the night, Ur of Moab is laid waste and brought to silence, because in the night, Kir of Moab is laid waste and brought to silence. So these two chapters are concerning Moab. Next two. A country east of the Dead Sea between Edom and Ammon. The north boundary of Moab is the river Arnon. The east boundary is the Arabian Desert. The Moabites were from the illegitimate son of Lot that had with his own daughters. And we find the story of that in Genesis 19:32-38. I'm not going to read all of that, but the meaning of the word Moab means what father, as though they didn't know their father, and I don't know who he is. And there are a type of those who profess a relationship but don't really know the father. The religious old man that doesn't see a need to be born again. And the story of Moab's attack on Israel in Numbers 22-24. You need to read that in harmony with this. And also you could read 12-24 of Numbers. And this is for a blessing. Numbers 24:14 is also should be read in there. I'm not going to take the time to go through there, but you can see how Moab treated Israel and how they tried to destroy him. And we read here, and now behold, in Numbers 24:14, it says, and now behold, I go into my people, come therefore, and I will advise thee what this people shall do to thy people in the latter days. Verse 17, he says, I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and desire all the children of Seth. And read on down through there. Read Numbers, the first 8 verses of Numbers 25. And we can compare this with Revelation 2:14, where God says, I have a few things against thee, because I hast them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, and to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit fornication. Now this is what they did in Numbers. When they came up there, they couldn't whip them, and Balaam tried to curse them, and he couldn't curse them. And so he came up with a scheme. Well, if we can't whip them, let's join them. And so they sent all the pretty girls down there to the camp of Israel, and they got them over to their side and defeated them. Got them committing adultery and offering sacrifices to their gods. And forget how many thousand was slain that day because of what they were. And we would never have known the details of that if it wasn't written in Revelation 2. But Moab has always been Israel's enemy. Another chapter to study along this line would be Jeremiah 48. Read 12 through 17, and he says, Therefore, behold, the day comes, saith the Lord, that I will send unto him the wonders that shall cause him to wonder, and he shall empty his vessel and break their bottles, and Moab shall be ashamed of Chemosh, as the house of Israel was ashamed of Bethel, their confidence. And you read on down through there, then we have the city of Ur mentioned in verse 1. Oh, I was thinking of Deuteronomy 2 along this. Verse 9. And the Lord said unto me, Distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in the battle. For I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I have given Ur unto the children of Lot for a possession. Now, these are all cities that are mentioned here of Moab. Ker is the same as Ker-Haraseth that we find in 2 Kings 3:25. In verse 2 through 4, he has gone up to Bajith and to Dibon, the high places, to weep. Moab shall howl over Nebo and over Medeba, and all their heads shall be baldness, every beard cut off. And in the street they shall gird themselves with sackcloth upon the top of their houses, and in the streets every one shall howl, weeping abundantly. Bald heads, beards cut off, show humiliation and weakness when they cut off a person's hair, or remember, reminds us of Samson, doesn't it? His strength was in his hair. When they cut his hair off, it was weak. And that's what the thought of it we have here. In verse 3, we have sackcloth. Now, this is a coarse fabric made of goat's hair. It shows sorrow, mourning, and subjection, especially of God's judgment. Heshbon means device or reasoning is a better rendering of that. And this is one of her enemies too, is reason. I think probably one might be one of the greatest enemies we have. And was it Proverbs 5 says, Trust in the Lord and lean not to your own reasoning. Reasoning, figuring things out, trying to understand things with our human mind is an offense. And this is where an enemy can get in and attack us real easy with a reasoning mind. Eliah means God is ascending. And Jahaz means a trodden down. So when God comes down, there's a trodden down. We have the word therefore because of this, because of man's great enemy reason that inverts things to bring their purpose to pass, then God turns away and ascends, and the nations that he leads is trodden down. In verse 5, it says, "My heart shall cry out for Moab. His fugitives shall flee unto Zoar, and a heifer of 3 years old, for by the mounting up of Luhithah." I don't know how to pronounce that, really. Luhithah, I guess, isn't it? "With weeping shall they go up, for in the way of Horonaim shall they raise up a cry of destruction." And we believe that this to be Isaiah that is crying here for Moab, as also in Jeremiah 48, we read of him crying out, and God caused him to weep. We read there that the Lord caused them to weep. Anyway, after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah before Moab and Ammon was born, Moab is called the heifer of 3 years, the prime of its life. Egypt also in Jeremiah 46:20, and the Chaldeans in Jeremiah 50:11. All of this is talking about their power that will be gone, and they will flee to the same place as Lot, their father, when he fled from the judgment of God of Sodom and Gomorrah. Also, that land is occupied by Saudi Arabia today, and the armies of the north will come again and destroy it when it comes to destroy Judah. Luhithah pertaining to the table or a flat place. And all the towns of Moab that will be seeking a hiding place wherever they can find. In verse 6, read, "The waters of Nimrod shall be desolate, for the hay is withered away, the grass faileth, and there is no green thing." Nimrod, we know who he is. He was a rebellious one, strong, clear. His name, I think, means clear water. The waters will fail. The vegetation is gone. In verse 7, we read that God had blessed them with plenty of water, but they didn't appreciate it. The brooks of the willows here in verse 7 is a figure of how brothers deal with brothers in time of trouble. And they just can't help it. In Job 6, we have a thought of this in verses 14 and 15, where he says, "To him that is afflicted, pity should be shown from his friend, but he forsaketh the fear of the Almighty." We read there that my brothers have done deceitfully as the brook, and as the stream of the brooks, they pass away. The brook, the stream here that grows willows, is good, fertile place. But it's also a place of weeping and sorrow. And Moab rejected when Judah was taken to Babylon, but Judah wept. They were taken to Babylon and they sat down, we read, in Psalms 137, 1 and 2. Read it, they sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hang our harp upon the willow in the midst thereof. Verses 8 and 9 of our lesson, "For the city is gone around about the borders of Moab, and howling there unto Eglon, and the howling thereof into Beer Elam. For the waters of Dimon shall be full of blood, for I will bring more upon Dimon, lions upon him that escape of the of Moab, and upon the remnant of the land." Eglam, another rendering of that is in Enelegum, as a place just north of the Dead Sea. This land will belong to Israel in the kingdom. In Ezekiel 47:9, we read about them, and it says, "And it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth, whatsoever the rivers shall come, shall live, and there shall be a very multitude of fish, because the waters shall come thither, and they that shall be healed, everything shall live, at whether the river cometh in this area. Now, in this 47th chapter of Ezekiel, we read of this river that'll come out of the temple, and it'll flow down through the valley of, anyway, down to the Red Sea. And the Red Sea will be healed. The Dead Sea will be healed. It'll no longer be a salt sea during the millennium. It'll be healed of the waters that come out of the temple of God. Now we read of the waters of Dimon. Now we don't know exactly the location, but the stream east of the Dead Sea will heal that place. And the thought is all that they called refreshing will be gone until God takes care of it. This will all belong to Israel, and they will leave it for place of safety. Dimon means a quiet, silent place.